This morning I continue my seven-part sermon series on the Unitarian Universalist principles, preaching on number three, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. By way of introduction, let me repeat that the Unitarian Universalist Church is a free church. That is, we are non-creedal. We don't ask anyone to believe in any creed whatsoever. So one could say believe in the ultimate freedom of belief. However, while we celebrate freedom of belief, we have over the centuries also celebrated what I call certain shared sympathies. And these sympathies, while not binding as some kind of creedal test, are our denominational covenant. And the current covenant, the seven principles, it starts, we, the member congregation, covenant to affirm and promote. This was composed with input from UUs across North America during the mid-80s. And the principles are printed on the back of a bulletin. There they are. You can confer at any moment. And I reported in my sermon on the first principle how the rediscovery during the Italian Renaissance of the ideas of the Greeks and Romans from antiquity, in particular the idea about human dignity and worth as opposed to the depravity proposed by Orthodox Christianity, that was new. And that really was the juice, the energy that got the whole Renaissance happening and has continued in our tradition to be held up as an ultimate value, this idea of personal internal goodness as part of our identity from the beginning. And the next week, I talked about the second principle, justice, equity, and compassion, how that derived not from the Greeks and Romans, but from the Hebrews, and particularly the prophets. Now, the third principle, in my experience, I'm not going to be highbrow and talk about ancient sources, because it's not so highbrow. It's pretty down to earth. Nevertheless, the third principle, in my experience, is potentially the most divisive of our seven principles. And someone who is not a Unitarian might find that peculiar, but it is true, because so many UUs have trouble with spirituality. It's like David said at the beginning, well, I was looking for spiritual growth, but I wouldn't have called it that. Now, most people coming to a church rather expect to find spirituality. But in my experience here, well, it's not so much that UUs have a problem with spirituality so much as the word spirituality. Their problems with the word, I think, are well-founded because of the way the forms of natural language end up determining and dominating how people think. The categories of the language, you know, you end up confusing the map, that's the language, with the territory, that's reality. The Transcendentalist Unitarian poet Walt Whitman wrote in Song of Myself, "The soul is not more than the body, and the body is not more than the soul." They're the same. They're intertwined. But that's not how most people think. Indeed, if you look up the word spiritual in the dictionary, which I did a few nights ago, it will say, Collier's New Century, of or pertaining to spirit as distinguished from matter, incorporeal. Language cannot help but operate this dualistically. It can't be not A. It's automatically dualistic. And unavoidably, natural language draws distinctions between things and in particular between opposites. If something is this, it can't be that, until the whole world's divided up into these categories. Like Lao Tzu says, in the beginning was one, then two, then three, then the 10,000 things. Categories like secular versus sacred, withdrawal versus engagement, heaven versus earth, and spiritual versus material. However, linguistic necessity notwithstanding, reality is nowhere near so black and white and divided into pieces as language is. What Whitman and the Transcendentalists understood, that body and spirit are inex- inextricably intertwined is not all that well understood by most people most of the time. Because we naturally think in the categories of natural language, the idea that reality transcends those categories is at first counterintuitive. It takes poetry and the use of metaphor to make us see the subtle ways in which time and eternity interface right here now in our midst. In the words of Rumi, a 13th century Islamic poet from Afghanistan, out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make sense. Deep down in that place out of which the great poets like Rumi and Whitman speak to us, antecedent to all categories where music and art touch a resonant chord, we know what spirituality is. Even if we have problems with the word, we understand the feelings behind the word, feelings of deep and abiding truth, of connections to the wellsprings of life, of personal fulfillment and meaning and purpose, not so much out of body as totally in the body and grounded and centered. And not only centered in the body, but centered socially and historically, too, as part of a long chain of others all intimately connected and all sharing a single soul, almost, a single universal mind. Anyway, that's what I mean when I talk about spirituality. And I am convinced what metaphorically sensitive people have been talking about for millennia. In 1999, 2000, I served for 1 year as interim minister in Binghamton, New York. And toward the end of my tenure there, the organist, Gail Schmick, came up to me and said something I'll never forget. "You're the first person," she said, "to make it clear to me that the seven Unitarian Universalist principles are a spiritual path." I remember driving home that day and thinking, yes, 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 yes. What we are about here, or at least what we can be about, is more than just ideas and positions. It's about developing our spirits, our souls, about becoming our complete, most fully refined selves and learning with each other's help how to love. What William Ellery Channing meant when he exhorted his parishioners to aspire after likeness to God, after integrating the best of the Spirit into our lives. This is our task, becoming more noble and thereby more fully human. Moreover, we have a lot going for us in this regard. Our ancestors in 17th century New England put a lot of thought and energy into what they were doing when they first organized or gathered. To use that quaint term among themselves, our earliest Unitarian congregations gathered themselves. Here were the ground rules. Anyone can join. No belief is compelled. The king could not dictate. There would be no bishops. And most important, all leaders, professional and lay, were chosen collectively by the entire congregation. It was a model then, and it is an excellent model today for the creation of non-hierarchical spiritual communities in which everyone has a place. The trouble, however, as William Sloan Coffin often noted, is that radical democracy tends to be kind of fuzzy. And in our congregations all too often, that has meant we have sometimes been willing to go along with and not challenge the loudest, kind of most truculent voices. And throughout the late 50s, 60s, and early 70s, all too often, those voices thought of spirituality in strictly dualistic and non, and altogether conventional terms. In our congregations, that all began to change in the late 70s, until by the mid-80s, we collectively agreed to this covenant to affirm and promote acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Last June, at the General Assembly in Spokane, I had a conversation with the Reverend Linda Wittenberg, whom I'd known in New Mexico, but who served that church in the 1990s, during which time they tripled in size. Of all the seven principles, Linda explained, the third is the most important. It's the only one that makes us truly different from my alma mater or the Lions Club or Rotary, because of that word, spiritual growth. And she went on to talk to me about her mother, who is in a Methodist church back in Illinois, but that group had through many years supported her, all these changes in her mother's life, losing a child, losing a spouse, retiring, struggling with physical problems. A little bit like our covenant groups, and when they're at their best, our covenant groups operate that way, in helping people keep on keeping on for another week. Helping prevent people. And you got to do that, because otherwise, you know, people come to church and they're looking to be fed. And if they're not fed, they'll stop coming. So just got to, that's why I worry about it at night. I got to really make a good sermon this week. Helping prevent that, where people come and they're disappointed or they've nothing there to feed on. Helping prevent that is the first aspect of the third principle. Acceptance of others. Okay, so someone sounds a little flaky to you, or weak-kneed, or too fuzzy in their thinking, or just the opposite, too left-lobed and hyper-analytical. What of it? We get into this judgment mentality, and truth be told, we are all pretty vulnerable. If seekers can at times look a little soft around the edges, how about their skeptical counterparts? Too rigid, misanthropic, and unimaginative? If the congregational mentality is one of criticism rather than respect, then we're all assailable, whatever our theology. I will always remember two amazing UUs I knew in Santa Fe, Joel and Marianne Yancey. They'd met in a World War II refugee place, and she had grown up in Upper Silesia, very near Auschwitz, and oh my God, what a life story they had. The Yanceys discovered Unitarianism in the 50s and were for many years members of the community church in White Plains, New York. Their minister there, Peter Samson, I knew him from when I first started, and he was a brilliant guy. But as Marianne explained, of Dr. Samson, Joel always said that he could deliver a wonderful lecture on one of the great writers or composers, but there was very little there, if anything, to help him get through the week. Joel could say that to his wife, Marianne, and he may have been able to say it to Peter Samson, but he could not say it out loud in the church. It wasn't that kind of place where opinions like that could be openly shared. It is certain that things have changed in White Plains over the last 35 years, and they have across our movement. When I first was in that area of Westchester and Fairfield County, in Danbury, they had me preaching only twice a month, but I always went to church because there were a couple of people that would go around and introduce themselves to every newcomer and say, you know, we're all atheists here, and if you're not an atheist, you won't be happy. So, nobody here is so naive and immature as to ask, why would they, you know, anyway, that was Bob and Lois. Well, they were nice people, but that was their theology, not everyone's. And before long, I learned to follow them around and set people straight. Well, that's Bob and Lois, not everyone. Maybe in the intervening years, we have all become a little more understanding or learned better how to appreciate diversity. But one thing that has inspired me over the years is the amazing variety and power of some of the spiritual practices I see in our UU lay people. I think first of the late Linus Pauling, two-time Nobel Prize winner and a member of the Palo Alto Church for 35 years. The one time I ever attended there, I just walked in casually and Linus Pauling was preaching. I didn't even know who he was. But I understood at once what he was talking about when he described his experience of scientific discovery. Or I think of Alice Kidder in my Berlin, Massachusetts congregation. She was the most dedicated and full-hearted social activist I've ever known. Tireless, totally committed, true. She gave away, I don't know, a third, maybe more of what she owned, her and her husband. And yet somehow they got back even more. They were an inspiration to everybody who knew them, even though they were a little scary because they were so out there, they made you feel guilty. Or then there's the altogether different spiritual practice and activism of Tom Andrews of the same congregation, an international banker with Brown Brothers Harriman. And when he wasn't writing silly musical comedies for our church fundraisers, he put his life energy into maturing and safeguarding union pension funds. Or consider Redwood City's UU Dan Wilbur, a pediatric oncologist helping cure children with leukemia, mobilizing those kids' inner resources to live and to go on from there and actually thrive well into middle age. What did these broadly divergent UUs have in common? They all had consistent spiritual practices that kept them centered and raring to go. There are many paths and many ways to grow in faith, to give ourselves the tools to become and remain more centered, grounded, and connected to one another. I can help you if you're looking for some of these. Come talk to me. To nurture within ourselves and those around us, and upon the ghost of Joel Yancey, the strength to keep on keeping on for another week. This ultimately is what encouraging spiritual growth in our congregations is all about. Making our churches safe and supportive places for us to reach out to one another and reach deep within. And what better place than a religious community to practice this kind of thing? Sure, there is some risk involved. It means living with and listening to people who in some cases are much different than we, who might be into occult phenomena, unusual dietary regimens, voluntary poverty, and who knows what else. It may also mean, in some cases, taking some new risks of our own into unknown territory that we want to explore but are nervous about and need support. In which case, the hopeful words from the Sermon on the Mount may be all the encouragement to spiritual growth we need. Ask and it'll be given. Seek, knock on the door and it'll be open. Search and you'll find. He who asks receives. Anyone who searches finds. For everyone who knocks, the door is open. Let me take a moment now, speaking of opening the door. Let me segue to the Mission Fund Drive, which formally begins this morning and will run throughout the month. We are not planning to knock on anyone's door, unless you ask us to, but we are asking for and hoping to receive from everyone a pledge to help fund the upcoming 2020-2021 year. The budgeting process is now underway, and I invite all of you to pay attention and to check it out. Our executive director, Jason, has put together a video that unpacks and demystifies the whole process, and it can be found at esuc.org. Follow the links. The budget team has set a reasonable and realistic goal. If everyone increased their 1920 pledge by only 5%, we would meet and exceed all our financial needs. And indeed, despite only starting this morning, early pledges from 8 members only already total over $83,500, or 13% of our total goal. These same 8 people have an average increase of over 12.5% in their ESUC pledges from last year. That is great. Now it is up to the rest of us to follow suit. Attending and supporting this church is a spiritual practice, paying manifold benefits year after year, and the more one contributes, the more it pays back in return, as David Langrock just reminded us. Please pick up your pledge packet in the foyer after service, and also please return them by March 29th, 4 weeks from today. On that Sunday, we will offer a delicious brunch all morning long, served by students at Renton Technical College, and that allows the membership to everybody come and enjoy the meal, and nobody's serving anybody. We're letting the Renton Technicals serve us. Pledge generously, and then come to church 4 weeks from today and celebrate. not everyone has a near instantaneous and transformational faith-building experience like the astronaut Edgar Mitchell had returning to Earth from the lunar surface. But almost all of us, I think, know what the poet Mary Oliver meant when she called to our hearts, bidding us to set out on the path to save yourself. That path, for everyone, is a spiritual one, no matter what language you use to describe it. And our third UU principle asks us to make that path a safe and warmly welcoming one for all who congregate, who gather here. Let it be so. However uncertain we are tempted to be, let us here this morning resolve to try harder and accept one another no matter what path we are on or they are on, and to support, encourage each other on those paths that we may grow together in faith, in spirit, in mutual respect and affection. Amen.